Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 77 of the Hockey Strength and Conditioning Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. Today's guest, a familiar friend to the site, Mr. Devin McConnell. Who's Devin? Devin is just wrapping up his first year as the Director of Performance Science and Reconditioning for the New Jersey Devils. Before that, he spent 8 years as the Head of Hockey Performance of the University of Massachusetts Lowell Hockey Team. He's also the author of Intent, a practical approach to applied sports science for athletic development. If you're in the hockey strength and conditioning field, Devin is definitely someone you know. And today we get into talking about his transition from the college level to the NHL. Before we get into the interview, I want to announce, in addition to new members-only content, we also have a brand new article from Devin's co-author, actually, Mr. Justin Rothling-Schofer, that is free. So you can head over right now to the website and read that. If you like that article or this podcast and you'd like to get access to literally 10 years worth of content in the hockey strength and conditioning field, then you can join our website right now for just $1 for 30 days, or you can pay $99 for the entire year, which is like one-third the price of an overpriced hockey stick. So head on over to HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com to learn more, sign up for our newsletter, or join the site. Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of the Hockey Strength and Conditioning Podcast. My name is David Rosales, and today I have a very special guest. It is Devin McConnell. Devin is the Director of Performance Science and Reconditioning with the New Jersey Devils. So, Devin, why don't you say hi? Welcome to the show.
How you doing? Appreciate you having me.
Doing all right. Yeah, so I am a little bit nervous, admittedly, because this is, number one, my first podcast. And so I wanted to start with somebody who I was a bit familiar with. So if you listen to our last episode with Brian Sippets and myself, then you know that I interned under Devin last summer, 2019, at the end of his reign with UMass Lowell. So I guess my first question, Dev, is how has the transition been to, first of all, living in New Jersey, moving, uprooting your family, and then just changing jobs?
Yeah, I mean, coronavirus chaos aside, transition was really good. Moved down here, accepted the position, and moved down here at the end of last summer, basically right at the end of the off-season training program at UMass Lowell. And you know, more or less the next, I think we finished on a Thursday, and the next Monday I was working down here. It took a few weeks, you know, as far as traveling back and forth a little bit on the weekends and getting the family, you know, moved down here, selling the house, and just all that type of stuff. But once we got down here, it was fantastic. We found a great place, great neighborhood. Couldn't be happier with where we kind of landed from a family perspective. It's been really nice. And the job has been really good. I was able to kind of start a few weeks prior to training camp. So I was able to get my feet wet and get up and running and kind of get used to the process a little bit before things really kind of hit the fan in training camp. And then was up and running, and it's been sort of a sprint from then until, you know, basically a month ago when everybody got kind of locked out and shut down and all that stuff has gone on. So it's, the transition was good, and it's been a lot of, you know, exciting moments and learning and figuring out, you know, a new job and a new role and new setting, but overall it's been great.
Yes, just for context, everybody, we are recording today on April 13th, 2020. So we are right in the middle of the tumultuous times of the coronavirus we find ourselves in. I want to get into what your job title is. And I understand that with the Devils, you work with a team. So tell us exactly what your role is as, quote, Director of Performance Science and Reconditioning. And who do you work with, and how do their roles differ?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So my job is... I see it, I kind of think of it as it's almost three different jobs, and we all wear different hats, so it's not unusual for anybody else in the department, but my role is kind of three-pronged. Part of it is the sort of the Director of Performance Science is really overseeing any and all of our sports science technologies and systems and approaches that we utilize. Everything from our, our athlete management system to our wearable technology that we wear on the ice, any of our force plate stuff and some of the other tools we have kind of in the weight room. I'm sort of specifically in charge of that stuff in the implementation of it, the analyzation of the information, the usage of it from a training and programming standpoint. If it's something that plugs into electricity, it's kind of, I handle it. That's kind of one part. A sort of separate piece of the director role is, and we can kind of get into the overarching organization of our department if we want, but I am basically helping to sort of design our departmental vision, I guess, and how we want to think about performance and performance training, I guess, in the National Hockey League, along with our traditional pieces of the puzzle from a strength and conditioning standpoint, and sort of transitioning into more of a high performance model, I guess, as some people would call it. So I'm kind of one of the people, we're all involved in that, everybody in our department, but that's sort of a specific side piece to that director position. I'm also on the floor from a strength and conditioning standpoint every day, assisting our head strength coach, Joe Lorenz, who's been a friend of mine and a colleague for a long time. We actually interned together to start our careers way back. So a day-to-day process, working with the athletes in training, I'm on the floor every day. And then the reconditioning part is the third piece, and that's really where I oversee the specific training of anybody who is out injured. So anybody that's sort of in a return-to-play capacity, as soon as they're able to get into the weight room in any capacity, which is almost always right away, I work in conjunction with our medical staff to sort of bridge the gap between, acute rehab and then return to play and getting them back onto the ice. So I oversee any of those people on a kind of a daily basis.
So you get to stay home with the injured players, the players coming back, which is, I'm sure, nice for you. I mean, seems like you have, just following social media, you have done some traveling, but for the most part, you're staying in New Jersey.
Yeah. So basically, that's exactly right. If there is an injured player, or oftentimes if we have players, our American League affiliate is not far away from us, which is a great setup. So if we have an injured player or even a special case from in Binghamton, I'll stay back if the team is on the road specifically to work with that person or those people so that they're getting, the service they need, even though the team is out competing wherever they might be. Occasionally, everything's great and, nobody's got a broken finger or anything like that. And so occasionally make a trip wherever the team is and help to assist and just do whatever I can do. But it's usually somebody's got something going on, and it's just kind of the nature of the game at this level. And again, especially having our American League team close between two teams, there's usually somebody that can use some help. So that's a big part of the role.
And I want to just, as a footnote, you're well known in our space as being kind of the data science guy. And so for people who don't know that side of what Devin does, I'd really recommend picking up a resource that he wrote a couple years ago now called Intent. So if you haven't checked that out, I would definitely go to that if you're interested in the data science side of performance. And I really want to get into, because something that you said to me when we were talking at Lowell together in your last days, you'd always said that the good of Lowell, one of the benefits of it was that it was your program, like you were the guy, it was just you. And that was also the downside of it, was that you didn't have other strength coaches to collaborate with in writing, in executing your programs. So just touch about, now that you've had, I guess not a full year, but almost a full year in collaboration with Joel and others, how has that transition been and what have you learned from doing that?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, there's pros and cons to any situation, right? At UMass Lowell for almost a decade, I spent, essentially the king of my own castle. I was 24/7 with the hockey team there, and sink or swim. And so it was, every decision was basically up to me, and every kind of rabbit hole I decided to go down was simply on my shoulders. good or bad. And here, you know, in New Jersey, I work with an entire team, right? There's another strength coach. We have a, you know, our VP of player care is also our physical therapist, and previously was also the sports science, kind of filled the sports science role. So we have a lot of collaboration in that space. We have collaboration in the program design and the day-to-day training and in that space. We have fantastic medical staff with a head and assistant athletic trainer that are really, really sharp and very engaged in everything we're doing. So collectively, we have a fantastic team. The challenge to that is that if there's some idea or some direction that I want to go, it's not solely my call. Now, I think we collaborate really well and we end up, you know, taking on board everybody's ideas, but I can't just come in Monday morning and decide I'm going to implement X, Y, or Z. You know, we need to go through the whole group to make sure that happens. And that's not in any way a bad thing. A lot of ways that helps to vet ideas and put different ideas and different perspectives on the table. But that's just the reality of it. The team approach, there's a lot more, you know, voices at the table and we all need to be on the same page. And most of the time that's great because that means the athletes are going to get the absolute best service that we can provide collectively.
What to you makes your collaboration successful? What makes it that you guys are, and maybe it's just because you and Joel have known each other, like you interned at Boyle's together, which is crazy, and now you're reunited. But what aspects of the collaboration make it successful and make it work?
Well, first and foremost, I think our whole group are good people. And we all get along and we're all friends and we have a good time together. We're all certainly aligned in our organizational vision and what we're trying to achieve, which I think is really important. We're all, you know, on the same page with that. But I also think we all have different, slightly different perspectives and ways of doing things, which I think is actually really important. The fact that, yes, Joe and I sort of come from the same coaching tree and literally kind of started at around the same time together is helpful, but we also have gone in the past 10 or 12 years in different directions and learn different things and do things slightly differently. So we have a similar foundation to how we think about training and performance, but we also have slightly different ways of doing that. So I think that's really beneficial because it leads to very useful discussion and questioning of how best to do things and brings fresh new ideas into the mix all the time.
I want to transition to a discussion, something that I've been pondering on that you discussed with Joe DiMeo on an Instagram live a few days ago, probably last week. And you talked about how at the NHL level, there's a lot of attacking the 1%. Which makes a lot of sense because these athletes are at such a high level. But on the other hand, you also have limited time because an NHL schedule is so crazy. So on one hand, sometimes you're maybe just doing like the big rocks, and at other times you're focusing on that 1%. So my first question is, how do you balance it? And when do you know when it's like, when are you focusing on a big rock day? Or like when it's like, okay, now we can focus on the little things, and just what's that interplay?
Yeah, it is. And I think that's one of the big challenges at this level is just such little amount of time and, you know, kind of energy resources are devoted and can be devoted to training. It's really every, you know, you play almost every other day in the NHL. It's 82 games in roughly 180 days. So you're literally preparing for a game every day. You're either playing a game or you're basically preparing for the next game. And I don't know that I do know that we don't have this perfect. I don't know that there is a perfect way or a perfect system. That's certainly what we're working on and trying to develop from our kind of top down approach. But one of the ways we try to achieve that, or certainly working towards that, is to be as precise as we can from an athlete profile standpoint, using our data to better understand exactly who our athletes are on an individual basis, what makes them them, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, so that when we get into the training process, we can be as pinpoint as possible with our training prescription, with what we're doing for those guys, so that we're not wasting any time or energy. Wasting energy and time is the wrong way to say it, but just working on general things when there's a potential to work on much more specific things for that individual. And just an example of that is using some of our tools to develop force velocity profiles on guys on the ice in skating and sprinting. Basically skating speed, sprinting speed is our main key performance indicator from a performance standpoint. So if we understand not just how fast guys go, but what makes them go fast or not go fast, is it are they force dependent or velocity dependent, or are they weak in those areas, whatever it might be. If we can better understand that, then when we have them in the weight room, how can we train them for those specific things versus a sort of a one size fits all approach, which sometimes realistically is necessary. You're on the road and you've got 15 minutes to get a lift in after a game, and you've got some kettlebells and a barbell and a couple of plates. Like it's a one size fits all. Like that's what you're doing. But if you have the opportunity when you're at home and we can dial it in a little more, and I know exactly that, hey, player A needs more force output and player B needs more velocity output, then maybe we can pinpoint that just a little bit more and again, kind of reach those 1%.
So it sounds like personalization when possible, when logistically scheduling wise possible, is how you manage both. And when you just don't have that available, then you kind of go back to the, like, we're just going to get our strength work in, we're going to get our whatever speed work in, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to look at it is certainly having a foundation of the general, general principles of training and general applications of that, rear foot elevated split squat being an example of like our primary lower body strength exercise this season. We did a little bit based on velocity when we would train that way, but the nuts and bolts of it were, by the time we could get a good block of training in and progress some guys, then there was a block of time where we couldn't get much training in. So then by the time we came back to it, it stayed pretty general. We didn't get super detailed with different prescriptions from a force velocity standpoint with that exercise. We just used it as, okay, generally speaking, lower body strength, good. Let's just keep kind of touching that as we go through the season. But if we could do a little bit more individualization with our trap bar jumps, and it was not super detailed down to the individual yet, but it was, okay, we have a bucket of guys that need more of the force, a bucket of guys that need a little bit more of the velocity. So we'll set up the weight room so that we can at least split the guys into two or three groups and get a little bit closer to that. So those are some of the things that we did from a training perspective. And those are the directions that we're moving that, like I said, we're certainly not where we want to be yet, but those are kind of the roads we're going down.
I want to ask you about an article that you wrote several years ago called What Really Matters. And the reason this article really spoke to me is because it's something we talk about a lot. So I'm going to read a portion from it. And it starts with a Mike Boyle quote: "A poorly designed program run well beats a well-designed program run poorly." And this is you. "I'm obviously not advocating for poor programming, but the reality is the most important part of our jobs is coaching, and coaching is teaching, and teaching is a big part of developing and strengthening organizational culture." Could you just speak to what you were getting at there with this connection between developing relationships and building a culture?
Yeah, well, I think everything that we do in strength and conditioning really comes down to building relationships. It's, just like the article said, and like Coach Boyle has said a million times, you can have a great program, but if you can't get people to do it, then it doesn't really matter. And you can have kind of an average program, but if you get people to buy in and work really hard, the reality is that usually checks a lot of boxes and gets a lot of work done. And I think, I think it's a little bit different at the college level and the pro level. At the college level, at least at Lowell, my role and the role of sports performance and strength and conditioning had a much bigger piece of the pie from a team culture standpoint. And I think that's college athletics in general. It's a bigger piece of what happens on a weekly basis. You're literally at a developmental stage in college hockey where, generally speaking, yes, you're trying to win without question, but the players are also trying to get better to get to the next level. So there's more of a team cohesion and culture aspect to the training process. But that stuff doesn't happen if players don't buy into the training process, and they don't buy in if they don't trust you, and they don't trust you if they don't like you, basically. And you have to, not to be everybody's friend, but you have to develop relationships where they understand that you genuinely care about them and what they're all about. That piece of the puzzle, I think, is no different at the pro level. It's the training side of things is less of a team culture piece of the puzzle at the pro level. Again, it's way less about development. You're playing a game the next day, like you're getting ready for a game every single day, basically. So you don't have these big blocks of time where training really takes over. And not that guys aren't trying to get better, but the focus is on the performance again the next day. So the training aspect of it is different. But again, and maybe even more so at the pro level, because they don't have to do what we ask them to do. If they don't trust us, if they don't believe that we have their best interest at heart, they may, basically tell you to go pound sand, and they can do that, and they have the right to do that. But you also are trying to develop a culture where guys do buy in and believe in it, and it starts to become kind of what you do in New Jersey or wherever you are. So again, I think all that comes back to relationships and getting people to trust you. And it's no different whether they're a professional athlete or college athlete. It's just the setting is different and the implications of it are a little bit different.
Yeah, I just want to speak to my experience. For me, when I walked into the UMass Lowell weight room, I was a tier three junior player. So I was quite intimidated by some of these just really impressive athletes. And I was scared to say hi to some of them. And Dev pulled me aside. I was like, David, like week one, like the most important thing is that you just are meeting all the guys, getting to know them, where they're from, who they are. And that ended up being one of the most important things Devin taught me that summer, was just if you can build relationships with people, then everything else will follow in order because they trust you and you trust them, and it becomes like a mutual relationship. The last thing I want to talk about, something that I know you love, and something I love, is books. So first, I'd like you to share your book project system that you had for the players at Lowell.
Okay. So we had, we call it a leadership library. And long story short, we ended up having, I brought in a bunch of my own books that were sort of on leadership and culture and, kind of in that vein. And had them available for players who were interested in reading them, as sort of a part of the bigger picture of trying to develop team culture, develop leaders within our team, and really is a foundational point for why I do what I do, especially at the collegiate level, was to help help young people become the best versions of themselves. So, those were all reasons why this kind of manifested. Where it started essentially was a couple seasons back, when we had sort of a postseason debrief. One of the things I would always do is do a questionnaire or a survey with the athletes, an anonymous survey, and let them tell me kind of what they liked, what they didn't like, whatever, feedback. And one of the things that kind of came up out of that a few years ago, after we had had a particularly unsuccessful season, was a lack of cohesive team culture, which was interesting because that had always been a very important and distinct part of our group at Lowell, but something had fallen off. And then a lack but players telling me they wanted to learn how to be a leader. They didn't really know how, how do you do this? What do you do? What does this actually mean? And so I kind of had the idea that, well, I have a lot of books on this these topics, and maybe I can bring some of this stuff in. And so what ended up happening was creating this sort of leadership library where the athletes could check out a book and read it if they were interested. The caveat was that they had to basically come back with a few notes on it. And we would talk it over and we would discuss, you know, the implications of leadership or culture or whatever and what they learned. And they had to share that with the group so that everybody benefited. And I thought this might be one or two players, because one or two or three guys were the ones who kind of expressed this interest to me and had these remarks in the survey. And what ended up happening over the course of a couple of seasons, a couple of summers in particular, was it really took off and became something that almost every single player engaged in. Guys would come in every week having checked out a book, and they'd come in with a couple of notes and sometimes full-on book reports, which was kind of outstanding considering the, you know, the group of athletes that I was working with. And they would share this information, and it became a really one, I think, beneficial thing for the individual to learn these things at a you know, an important stage of their life, but was also just really a unique opportunity for the team to kind of come together in a way that was bigger than just lifting weights and a sort of a bigger picture piece of the puzzle.
Thank you for sharing that. I really love that story, and I really love how it connects to what we were talking about, that it's about the bigger picture. It's about the relationships. It's about the trust, and that leads to the culture. Everyone listening should follow Devin on Instagram for two reasons. Number one, his kids are adorable. And if someone has either cute kids or cute dogs, there's no good reason to not follow them. And the second reason is because he often reposts what he's reading. So Devin, I want to ask you, I'm stealing this question from Tim Ferriss. What's one of the books that you've given the most as a gift? Maybe let's do one for coaches and colleagues and one for players.
The one book for sure that I've given the most and recommended the most, is my all-time favorite book is Legacy by James Kerr. It's about the New Zealand All Blacks. It's probably 10 years old now, but, I've read it basically at least once a year. That's been an outstanding one. I think that's great for everybody, for coaches, for athletes, for people in the corporate world, whatever. I think the lessons out of Legacy are profound. If we want to talk about a specific sort of strength and conditioning coaches resource, I've read a bazillion of them. I recently have read Anthony Donskov's latest book. He's got two books on training. I think his two texts on training in hockey are the best resources written on that specific niche. So I think obviously on this podcast, I think most people are probably going to be familiar with Anthony Donskov. If not, his two books are absolute great reads for coaches in any training sense, but certainly in this niche.
I think that's a wonderful place to wrap up. Devin, thank you so much for taking the time. And thank you so much again for allowing me to work under you last summer. And I'm really grateful for that. Where can people reach out and say hello? Where's the best place to reach you?
Well, first and foremost, thank you very much. This has been a blast. It's always good to catch up. I'm really excited to see where the website's going to go with you. You're becoming a leader in the field without even really knowing it. So I'm excited and appreciative of the opportunity. You can follow me on both Twitter and Instagram at the same name, at dmcconnell29. You're right. Instagram is a fair amount of mix of my kids, books I've read, and occasional training video or something like that. Twitter is way more of a semi-professional strength and conditioning outlet for me that I'm pretty active on. But both are great places to follow me and see what I'm doing.
So that is at dmcconnell29, two C's, two N's, two L's.
Correct.
So, and Devin is spelled D-E-V-A-N. So if you Google Devin, you should be able to find him. Once again, Devin, thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to talking soon.
All right, buddy. Good to see you.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, everybody, so much for listening to this episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast.
And thank you, Devin, for being my first guest and for allowing me to get some of the nerves out. If you'd like to read our top 10 free articles, you can go to hockeystrengthandconditioning.com right now and download those. And if you'd like to join the site and get access to literally 1,000 pieces of content from some of the best strength coaches in hockey, then you can join right now for just $1 for 30 days or $99 for the entire year. And of course, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, please reach out to me. You can slide into my Instagram DMs at David Rosales Fitness, or you can send me an email to find me on the website. Thanks, guys.